This is Film Corner.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it. You've been cornered. It's happened again.
And our Francophile in chief suggested this movie, I seem to remember.
What was it?
I think so.
Was it me that suggested this?
It certainly wasn't me.
I think you'd certainly seen it.
And then, I actually saw this.
You greenlit it, and then
this film could have been folded into my my French holiday anecdote, which patrons have been feasting on.
There's one comment that someone said, "Oh, this is long." I couldn't quite work out what they meant, like whether that was a good thing or a...
probably a good thing. Yeah,
yeah.
Normally, that's a good thing.
But we are here to review Under Paris.
Well, for us, Mike, it's called Under Paris.
Yes.
For Henry, it's called Under the Seine. Is that right in French?
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Sous la Seine? Sous la Seine?
Yes, I think it was Sous la Seine. I think it was Under the Seine in French, maybe, was it? But we watched this as part of my French holiday.
Were you in France when you watched it?
I was in France when I watched it.
Okay.
So it felt all the more visceral and real.
Yeah.
I
can well imagine.
But so I am...
As ever, there's a big spoiler warning here. And perhaps you've seen it.
The film is shit. We're going to tell you that now. So sorry to spoil that.
In terms of the rest of the episode, you can very much skip ahead.
It's
now and or just get on with your day's work, because that's very much the take home message.
Yeah, it is. It's fucking awful.
It's disastrous.
So sorry to ruin that for you.
So the film is Under Paris. Now, Under Paris is a film on Netflix. I think it's Netflix original movie.
Yep.
It's en français. Mm-hmm. Which I have to say was quite discombobulating for me.
Because
normally when I'm watching something in French, it's very, very good.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Isn't it?
I think
there's also only four lines of dialogue in the whole film, right? So you can genuinely enjoy the visuals.
What, in a French film?
Oh, yeah, proper art house film.
Yeah.
No one's having to explain what's going on or why.
And also, most French films that make it across to the UK are very, very good.
Well, that's it. If I'm watching a film with subtitles, from any film, it means that it's made it to the UK.
Well, it's been vetted by Kermode.
Exactly.
It's been twice vetted by Mayo, hasn't it? It's had to get through various, like...
It's jumped through the hoops, hasn't it?
It's had to jump through the hoops, hasn't it?
So this was my first experience of watching a shit film in French, I think. Probably.
Oh, really? Yeah, because you don't expect... I guess, we're trained to believe that they don't make them, but they do, same as everyone else.
Oh, they
same as everyone else.
They absolutely.
And maybe even worse than a lot of other people, actually, I think.
Mm.
I think a bad French film is a real stink out. Yeah.
When I was in France recently, I went... Because I was on my own. I went to the cinema a couple of times.
Mm.
And I thought, they'll be showing some English language stuff. You know, we are the cultural hegemon. Hollywood's tendrils would have made its way here.
Yeah.
But actually, most French cinemas are showing lots of French films. They seem to make a lot of films, many more than we would make in Britain.
Yeah.
But a lot of them look like really shit comedies, where it's like there's a guy dressed as a horny waiter.
And some boobs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that'll be on the poster.
Yeah. They all look a bit sort of rudimentary.
Yeah. There'll be a sort of guy who's clearly playing an idiot figure. Ugh, ugh. And you'll know he's an idiot because his specs are on an angle and his tie is kind of sticking in the wrong... You know, it's a little like his collar's all messed up and his tie's not on properly. And...
Yeah, they'll make sure he's short or fat or both.
Exactly.
And working in some sort of service capacity.
And to be honest, I don't think the British film industry... I don't think we can sit here... Like, we mainly make now just films with sort of Helen Mirren running a... The Knitting Running Society, Dog Home.
It's the silver top dollar. That's what it's all about now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's Helen Mirren is trying to knit an entire dog home, isn't it? And she's only got until Christmas to do it.
And who's this? Is it Piers Brosnan with some grey hair? Good heavens me. Delicious.
Hang on. Jim Broadbent hasn't been in this film. What's going on? It's been 19 minutes. Oh, hang on, there he is. Oh, thank God.
That's because the whole thing is actually set on Jim Broadbent's face. It's all set on Jim Broadbent's face. That's the twist. We were on Jim Broadbent's face all along. Whereas the French, the movies the French pump out, As we're saying, there's a guy with his spectrum on an angle, his hair's dishevelled, he's got a tie sticking out at the wrong angle, and he's literally on the post, he's sort of hemmed in by three or four sets of cleavages. He's kind of sort of trapped. He's in a kind of boob prison, and often it'll be called something like boob prison, exclamation mark.
Boob prison. The boobs and have to be the sort of granddaughter age for him as well.
Of course. Yes. Le boob Bastille.
Le boob Bastille. And he'll be a guy that works in quite a lowly sort of pen-pushing clerk sort of position, a kind of bureaucratic position, but for some reason is having an affair with like five or six crazy hot sets of cleavage. That's all they are.
There was no light relief in Under Paris, though, was there? There was no... Because normally in your modern action or disaster film, there'll be something. There'll be someone who's...
There's often the wisecracking sidekick kind of character. Exactly.
It was po-faced, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Po-faced.
You're right. And that's a real problem. I think when a film or TV show or anything doesn't have a
wisecracking shark.
A wisecracking shark or a disheveled sort of lascivious bureaucrat, it's a real problem because you start laughing at the film. I think that's what has to happen because you have to laugh at something. Yeah. So there isn't a silly comedy goblin.
They had people.
You just have to laugh.
They could have been in a funny position. You know, there were a couple of bureaucrats knocking about.
Yeah, but you're right. I had absolutely no sense of humour in that film.
A river police chief. Also, loads of options. They were there.
Sorry to drag us back to the French film industry.
Please do.
But the other day, I had cause for some reason to look up the highest grossing ever French films.
Oh, can I tell you? I know what some of them are. I think.
Okay.
One of them is called Les Visiteurs.
Okay.
The Visitors. Is that up there?
Not that I can see, no, but...
That's about two dishevelled guys that are constantly...
Being... No, here it is. That's the 15th highest.
By boobs. That's some sort of time-travelling, but you can see from the poster it's very broad.
So I was talking about Le Visiteurs because we did an episode where we, in our imitable style, bantered away at the idea of a film of something...
Inimitable.
What did I say?
I think you said imitable.
Oh, yeah. We're highly imitable.
Highly imitable.
Ben was right the first time.
In our... Yeah, you wouldn't even need any kind of AI. I mean, a very simple AI. I mean, like sort of basic... One of those, like, sort of science calculator could probably do it.
Yeah. Or a really, really rudimentary 17th century camera, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But you could basically knock up something pretty similar. Yeah.
Anyway, there's an episode a while ago where we ended up talking about an idea for a film that we called Royal Blood.
Yes.
In which I think a king from the medieval times comes back to the modern era and doesn't understand. Blah, 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 blah.
It was a problem-free time travel film, finally.
Yes. And lots of people said that film has been made. It's called Les Visiteurs.
Really? Yes, that's right.
In French, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it stars, what's his name? Jean Reno.
Does he really?
Oh, Jean Reno.
He does a comedy turn, doesn't he? Yeah.
But he'll be in every single French film we've just mentioned, as will Juliette Binoche. They're always in all of them are in all of them.
Yeah, she doesn't do the comedy, though, does she? I don't think.
Maybe not.
At least I've not seen her do it. Maybe she does. I've not seen it.
So it says here, in this comedy, a 12th century knight and his squire travel in time to the end of the 20th century and find themselves adrift in modern society.
Great.
And that's basically what we were talking about.
I'm going to have to hit that big time. Is one of the big grossest ones the one, there's a taxi, might just be called Taxi, in Marseille with, what's the chops? She's the Margot... No, not Margot.
Oh, yeah, there was a taxi one.
It's just a guy driving really fast in a taxi. Marseille drug scene thing.
Oh, don't know.
That sounds quite cool.
What's her name? The one who did that, the one with the orcas. I watched
the orcas one.
She was just like an orca trainer who got injured.
Yeah.
And has to rebuild her life. What is her name? She's done loads of Hollywood stuff. Is it Margot?
Cotillard?
Marion Cotillard. Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, I think that was one of her sort of breakthrough roles.
Is there a film called Dîner de Cons in there?
What's that?
No, it's not there. Not on the list.
No, but a Dîner de Cons is very high up. And it's like Idiot's Dinner or something. And that was made into a really broad American version.
Okay.
With Steve Carell.
Oh, yeah.
That was quite bad. And again, it's about a kind of idiot. It's just about a sort of idiotic character guy.
Yeah.
Who's like his trousers are too high and everything's wrong with his dress.
Okay, so number one highest grossing film ever in France.
Please.
Oh, I know. Is it the Le Grand Bleu?
No.
Third Time's a Charm.
It is. James Cameron's Titanic.
Obviously, yeah, sorry. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Okay, yeah, obviously. That's the biggest film everywhere.
But Second is a French movie, and I'm sending you the poster for it now on WhatsApp. Okay. And bear in mind, this is the second biggest selling movie of all time in France.
Are you WhatsApping this to us?
Yeah, I've just sent it this second.
Okay. What the blazes? Bienvenue, Shaley. Welcome to the home of
I don't know what that means, but that's
CH'TIS.
It's exactly what I'm talking about there, Ben, isn't it? But this time,
are you supposed to pronounce that?
I don't know. Shtiz. Bienvenue. So welcome to the shtiz.
It means shtiz welcome to the sticks.
And it's two just sort of really broad looking comic character types, isn't it?
Right, I'm gonna tell you the setup for the movie, and I want you to tell me whether you think this is a sort of good idea for a film.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Philippe Abrams is the manager of the French post office branch in Salon de Provence in southern France.
Nice.
He's married to Julie, whose negative character makes his life miserable.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Bloody Julie.
Oh, the old Julie. Indoors.
If it only wasn't for Julie, he'd be...
Philippe does everything he can to get a job at an office on the Mediterranean coast to make her happy. Hmm. Fine. Okay. As it is perceived that the position will be acquired more easily if one is disabled, Abrams pretends that he is disabled.
Okay. Oh, dear.
And is found out by the management. Yeah. As a punishment, he's banished for 2 years to a town near Dunkirk, known as the Styx.
Of course, so that's just the setup.
Right, it's not actually the whole
offensive setup.
So many reasons they could have had him sent to Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than trying to pretend to be disabled, which is incredibly, incredibly offensive.
Yeah.
There we are.
And what happens? But is what happens when he's in?
Oh, lots of stuff happens. That's where we.
That's just
off.
The setup. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that. Well, there you go. There's a glimpse into the true sort of French psyche.
Highest grossing French language film in France of all time.
So maybe that's why there's nothing funny in Under Paris then, because maybe the French way is if it can't just be that there's a character who's a bit wisecracking, a bit of a Greek chorus type, you know, a bit of a court jester. It's got to be full comedy or nothing. Maybe that's the thing.
Yes,
maybe
that could be the case.
So yes, the film is Under Paris, and we've given away what we think of it, which is absolutely shit.
Yeah.
And I was a bit worried about this one because I felt like Film Corner is a still evolving organism, right?
Yeah. Who are we to be bad mouthing movies, right?
Well, what I don't think it is us watching films that we know are going to be crap and then saying they're crap, right? Because there's...
Yeah.
And that's quite a common podcast thing, I think. There's a lot of, like, bad film...
Oh, it's easy. I think we were led to believe that it was quite good.
But that's the thing.
Henry, you said that it was well-received, didn't you?
It's had crazily good reviews. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but there's something...
So it sounds like we're wrong. So that's good. That's in our favour, then. We're slanging off and it's
No,
wrong.
We're definitely right.
But we are right.
But the review it had in The Guardian...
Do we need to tell people what it is, roughly? It's basically a massive shark comes to Paris and has got no business being there.
Oh, by the way, today is the 49th anniversary of the release of Jaws.
Is it really?
Yes. Yeah.
Very appropriate.
And I was thinking about that, and I think, obviously, everyone knows Jaws is one of the best films ever made. I would agree.
Yeah, superb.
Yeah.
And I think the long tail of Jaws has led to this whole world of shark movies.
Yes.
All of which are bollocks.
But then sometimes it's bollocks and you know it and you lean into it hard. You do your Sharknado. Great fun. You've got a lot of time for it.
Is the mega shark?
The mega shark.
So it's a megalodon.
Like a prehistoric shark.
The film Jaws has just reminded me of something that once, years ago, Mike,
became the mayor of a town in New England.
And refused to close the beaches.
Refused to. I remember saying to him, how many more teenagers must die? But he was hemmed in by cleavages at the time, and his tie was on, his moustache was on an angle. He went, I've got too many cleavages here. Mike once, years ago, got me to, or offered me, or got me a gig being the sort of comedy entertainment at I think it's a friend of a friend of Mike's best man night. Yeah. Was that what you call it?
It's like a friend of a friend of
stag,
a friend
stag,
of a
stag.
Kind of thing. Yeah, I can't
it was a friend
remember.
Of a friend of a friend. So it was a stag do, and at the stag do, they watched Jaws, because the person who stag it is, I won't reveal who it was, but is quite high up in the film industry, isn't he, Mike?
Oh, yes.
Jeremy Irons.
It's Jeremy Irons.
Yeah. Golly, I'd forgotten that detail,
And so I had this gig. So basically, they all watched.
I assume they'd ask Mike, "Mike, do you want to do stand up at a stag do?" He went, "Fuck no."
That's exactly
what happened. Terrible gig.
That's exactly what happened.
Well, I make a prick of myself in front of Jeremy Irons.
Yeah. I tell you what, this twat'll do it. He's absolutely desperate for cash. He's in a real hole.
And there's no way he's going to impress Irons, so it's safe for me. I don't lose anything in this. There's no one who could ever be less impressive
than
Irons.
Just take my 70% commission, and then I let him loose.
So basically, it was in a bar, a basement bar. They'd all just watched Jaws, which is because Jaws is a classic film buff film to say is your favourite film, or yeah. It's up there.
Yeah.
And it's... What's great about Jaws is it's both really good and just actually really fun to watch, isn't it? It's like it's just a proper action thriller.
Yeah.
That visual also,
feast, all hangs you know, together.
But it's also cinematic tense. Genius for some reason. Probably because of the fact you don't see the shark much.
Well, that's what everyone says, isn't it?
Yeah, good exactly. One,
whereas in this film, we saw the shark a lot.
Far too much.
You see the shark a lot.
Sick of the sight of that thing.
And this is the problem with that shark, because I feel like we as film watchers have seen bigger sharks. Like I feel like either Jaws was bigger or felt bigger. Like when it swooshes up to the boat towards the end and they see it for the first time.
Yeah.
They're like, it doesn't feel as big as that.
But the other thing, Mike, I wasn't clear how big the shark was because there was no scale shot.
They never held up a 20p.
You never saw a 20p. You need to get that scene in early where someone thinks maybe it's coin operated and if I put 20p in, I can set it to stop being so nasty. I need someone to try that to get it through the gill, one of the gills. Maybe it's a coin-op shark. It's worth trying it.
They do mention the size on one occasion, right at the beginning.
But it shouldn't have to just be mentioned. You ought to feel it.
It's fleeting, exactly. And because there's jaws, but also... We're also not long after the megalodon, for goodness sake. I mean, it's the size of, like, it's the units of double-decker buses is what we're being measured. That's what's measuring the megalodon. So you can't just tell us this is a massive shark and us to be impressed.
Was it supposed to be massive or
not? It was supposed to be very big and also bigger. It had grown much quicker than it should have done.
Well, there was a weird thing in it, which was I assumed, oh, it's a great white shark. That's the that's the shark you get in a shark film, right?
I kind of assumed that. I believed that until the other day when I read a review that said it wasn't.
Well, it's a Mako shark, right? But it's much bigger than it's meant to be. Why did they do that?
I think the reason is because someone decided to put in a quote about adaptation and evolution at the very beginning on a title card at the beginning.
Yes.
And I thought it looked probably quite cool and savvy and something had to be crowbarred in about that. It can just be a very big shark. That's all anybody needs.
I think it might be, though, because when the three soulless, vampiric hedge fund... managers, whatever, got together to plan this film and had their first creative brainstorm. One of the ideas flying around might have been, well, they've done Great White, so
how do we
make it fresh and new?
Well, I wondered if it was that, but it was more like, actually, we literally can't because the rights to Great White Sharks are owned by Steven Spielberg. The quote at the beginning, the film opens with a quote, and it says this: "The species that survive aren't the strongest species, nor are they the most intelligent, but rather the ones who best adapt to change." Okay. Mm. Who's that quote by?
Did they say it was Darwin?
Well, no, Mike. They said, based on Charles Darwin.
Based on Charles
Darwin. Wow. You didn't miss that.
So rather than quoting Charles Darwin...
I read that in exactly the way they wanted me to read it, didn't they?
But then... So, but you can't have the quote mark. So that, Dan, does that mean, do you do it in the voice or not, if you're reading out loud? Do you do it in the Darwin voice?
So I assume that's not a quote by Charles Darwin.
No, it doesn't
based
sound
on
like
Charles
But it's the kind
Darwin.
Of thing he might have said.
So what, and what
I guess
did,
the
what,
next level along is that they put the quote marks around Charles Darwin's name as well. The further distance the quote.
Anyway, Henry, this stag do.
Oh, no, well, no, the stag do is just, so they'd all watched Jaws.
Yeah.
And then I was the entertainment post Jaws. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
But all I remember is it was a tough gig. Mm-hmm. And you know you feel you're losing them when you're having to sort of do things involving the furniture and stuff.
What, tell them you're a cleaner? You're just a loquacious cleaner.
I had to do a version of that thing when that guy went on BBC News. He wasn't actually...
The cabbie.
The do one of that. I had to pull that. It's the absolute last gasp emergency cord you can pull as a comedian.
Sorry, it's just very unlikely.
I'm not
coincidence. I'm not.
I know. I'm actually here to clean, and I've come. I always try and do it during the. I find it clean as you go. I always my approach. I try and clean during the evening, during the revelry rather than after. As clean as you go, quicker for me. Cleaner for you.
So yeah, so the film.
He does look like me from the photo. Yeah. So what I did, the only thing I remember was at one point I tried to recreate the shot. There's a famous shot in.
It's a dolly shot where it moves away from him and zooms in at the same time.
Exactly. Because okay. I had the audience, they were all in front of me, and I was in this bar, so there was quite a lot of stools and tables around. And I tried to recreate.
Sort of Roy Schneider looking.
The Roy Schneider dolly shot by suddenly moving all the furniture really far away from me or something, going like that.
Silence.
To silence and a couple of fucking Mike, you cunt. I'm pretty sure I heard that.
Let's just watch Jaws again. Then we got Jaws 2.
I'd even watch the famously atrocious Jaws 4 right now. The one with Michael Caine in a helicopter.
Well, there's an element in this film that I never really got my head around that reminded me of Jaws 4. So Jaws 4 is bad for loads of reasons.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is that the shark roars when it rears out of the water and goes, roar!
Which obviously that's a terrible decision. They don't have the vocal cords. Exactly. That's a terrible decision.
And the other reason it's bad is because the whole story, I think, as far as I remember, is that one shark, or the shark, has a personal vendetta against one of the characters. I think,
and chases him across the world, basically.
Exactly, and he will never be safe because of the shark. Yeah. So in this film, what happens is we start with watching a woman who's involved in sort of subaqua marine biology type stuff, right?
Yeah. But specifically, it's cleaning up, isn't it? A gross part of the ocean, which is full of litter.
Full of plastic
and
stuff.
Plastic and stuff. So it's not, I'd say the opening like 5-6 seconds are okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not a bad setup.
It really then has very little to do with actually what the movie's about.
Yeah.
It suggests, this is going to be a thing about conservation.
It's not about that at all. No. But
And long story short, all of her team basically get eaten by sharks apart from her. She's the survivor, right?
Yeah.
Including a very clearly wedding ringed hand gets
Her husband,
eaten off, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So then she returns to Paris where she has a new job sort of on land in Paris.
In an aquarium.
Of course. So that's literally, how long do they think about that? I think the hedge fund guys, they literally thought about that. That is a 3 second. So she needs a new job. Aquarium. Yep, move on. I'd say it's 2 to 3 seconds of thought.
Brilliant.
That.
Yeah. It's so easy.
It's a piece
really
of piss.
Easy.
Yeah.
And then basically the idea is that the shark, which has got a tracker on it, because it's being tracked by marine biologists and stuff, has made its way to Paris, and it's in the Seine, right? That's the setup of the story.
Yeah.
But it was never explained to me, or maybe I just zoned out. Is it following her?
No, there's no reason. No, they really missed that bit out. And I assume they must have had that discussion. Was it following her? Because it tries to kill her, doesn't it? And
so I thought, is it the Jaws 4 vendetta story once more?
They don't make that clear. Is it just an extraordinary coincidence?
I think
early on in the film, so sod it.
I think the hedge fund guys, they went, okay, so why would a shark follow someone across the world?
Yeah.
6 seconds, pause. No one said anything. This is actually really hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is actually really incredibly hard. No, wait. Maybe there's no reason. This is easy again. I knew it was easy.
Move on.
There's no reason. Move on.
And they brush past quickly the whole thing that it's now able to... Oh, it must have adapted to swim in fresh water, blah, 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 blah. All that kind of stuff.
But you're right,
And then away we go. And then also they have the very tricky problem of working out why anybody should give even half a shit about the fact that there is a shark in the Seine. Because, of course, the reality is that if there was a shark in the Seine, people would say, oh, there's a shark in the Seine. Who does that affect? Well,
but that's where the triathlon comes in.
Exactly. So they have to put a triathlon in.
Yeah.
But what they can't do is say, well, should we delay or cancel the triathlon? No, we need to make it a really, really important triathlon.
Well, it's such an important triathlon that the... recalcitrant mayor of Paris, ringing any bells?
She's told that there's the Seine is full of sharks, so if you do the triathlon in the Seine, everyone will die. And she goes, no, no, no.
But also, Ben, the other thing I think is hilarious about her is that she has a completely unnecessary architectural map of the Seine in her office.
Yes. About which she says the line, do you recognise it? And you're like, well, yeah.
It's outside, yes. It's literally out the window.
I mean, but there's quite a big shot, isn't there? I seem to remember pulling back over it.
Yes.
This kind of architectural model.
And again, the hedge fund manners is that they've seen action films before. They've seen disaster films before. They know that that's how this works. There has to be a model of the thing.
Yeah.
There has to be a model of a thing somewhere.
Exactly. But...
And can I just say, in general, every interhuman, interpersonal reaction feels very uncanny valley and a bit false. Like, nothing rings true.
No.
The one that really stuck for me is quite early on. We see the main character and she's working in the aquarium and she's showing some school children around and in her new job. And one of the school children says, is it true that all of your friends were killed in a shark attack?
Yes.
And then she just looks a bit sad.
Yeah.
And they just sort of laugh and carry on. I thought, in what world does your teacher not absolutely bollock you? A kid on a school trip brought up the murder of the person's friends and husband.
Yeah, you are for it. And you are formally apologising to that person in front of everyone. Yeah. And the trip is over.
Exactly.
Your parents are hearing about this as soon as you get home.
Yeah. Whereas the teacher just kind of goes, oh, don't worry about that. It's all...
And also it was just such a bizarrely horrible thing for the kid to say as well. Didn't really
so cruel, and also really needless. We don't need the plot reminder because we've literally just had to see all that.
Yes, you're right. We didn't need the plot reminder. Yeah.
We know why she might look a bit sad, even though there's a suggestion that time has passed because she's got a different job and a different haircut. Despite
that's right.
we can possibly put all that together. I did have a theory about, and a literary theory about this movie. I think this is still plausible with the hedge fund manager theory, because they definitely, the French hedge fund managers, they would have had to read this at school. I think that they have attempted at some point in the writing for it to be a retelling of The Hunchback of Notre Dame. by Victor
okay.
Hugo. Yeah.
Do you think
I'm
possibly,
intrigued.
Mike, I want to know why you think this, but do you think it's possible that this was originally pitched as a version of The Hunchback of Notre Dame?
And it got committed by committee. This
it's gone
happens.
Through the development process. It's come out as a shit shark film.
There were too many brains in the room.
Yeah. We can't just have an ugly guy now. It needs to be a shark instead, please. And just could you make that work.
I mean, what is a shark fin, but if not an aqua hunch?
Exactly.
Here we go.
Exactly.
Is that the basis of your theory?
Well, that's part of it. Absolutely.
Okay, like
are you familiar with the story of...
I've seen the Disney maybe. Adaptation. I think that's the closest I've come.
Not massively, actually, no. What's the main things?
But bullets point-wise, you've got Quasimodo, right? Hunchback, right? He's taken in as a vulnerable, despicable, hated child by a priest who turns out to be really dodgy later at the Notre Dame.
But as we've already discovered in our earlier chat, that character or versions of him are... massive in France and massive in French films.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Aren't they? Anyway, carry on.
And this dodgy priest who he trusts gets him to kidnap the beautiful Esmeralda. A handsome soldier intervenes. Quasimodo is whipped. Esmeralda's kind to him. The soldier woos Esmeralda. Mad priest stabs him. Blah, 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 blah. Basically, this Quasimodo is vulnerable. He's taken in by this priest, trusts him. The priest keeps betraying him. People get mixed up and accused of the wrong things all this time. Basically, Lilith the shark is Quasimodo, right? And instead of trusting a mad priest, Lilith trusts that Sophia, the original conservationist...
Sorry, by the way, the shark is called Lilith.
I've forgotten that the shark's called Lilith.
The shark is improbably called Lilith.
Hedge fund manager's niece. Sorry, Karen.
So she trusts this conservationist, yeah? And that's why she goes to France. Much like Quasimodo, you know, she is hiding in the shadows of Paris looking for love, right?
Right.
For a mate.
Also slightly Phantom of the Opera.
Slightly Phantom of the Opera. Despised, loathsome, thought to be dangerous by the baddies, all that kind of stuff, right? But thought to be harmless by the tender people. The Esmeralda is the young scientist, Mika, who keeps trying to tell them, no, Lilith is fine. We've just got to help Lilith. We can't be trying to hunt Lilith.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Shark falls in love in a Quasimodo. That's the Esmeralda. They fall in love Esmeralda as this young conservationist, like Esmeralda, is villainized by the baddies, and the baddies here really are Sophia and the police guys, right? They're the baddies.
Yeah, you might although think they're the heroes.
They're the heroes. They are the baddies.
Interesting.
Yeah, they villainize this young conservationist, and of course in Victor Hugo's version, Quasimodo tries to rescue Esmeralda when she's incorrectly accused of trying to stab someone. That was the mad priest. She's done nothing wrong. A mob comes after her. She's going to be hung. She's taken in by Quasimodo into the Notre Dame as sanctuary, right? Lilith attempts to do the same rescue of her Esmeralda, but because she is a shark, she accidentally bites her in half.
Bites her legs off, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, I mean, in the book, Quasimodo, it all goes wrong. Esmeralda gets nobbled by the priest after all and hung. And then Quasimodo goes off into a sort of exile. In this one, Lilith attempts to go into exile and on the way tries to get a snack, i.e. some triathlon athletes, and is attacked with consequences we can come to later.
Superb.
Yeah. I mean, it's beat by beat. Perfect.
That completely checks out. The only small difference I'd say in terms of the way the audience's sympathies are played is that Quasimodo, I don't think at any point Quasimodo sort of eats 40 students. Does he? Because there's that hilarious scene, which I found absolutely hilarious, where
I found it very funny as well.
Suddenly, there's all these, well, I'm calling them students, they're these young,
sort of Just Stop Oil types.
Just Stop Oil climate activists.
Oh, it was, yeah, this is very much pandering to the anti-woke. You can hear yes. them.
I could hear my own lips smacking.
The audience is in like Marseille and Nice. You can hear them cheering in the cinema.
It's true.
It's the woke conservationist students.
Are absolutely hammered by the shark.
Because
suddenly they're all falling. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Suddenly everyone's falling in the water and no one can get out and they're all falling back in and the shark just...
So this actually happens twice. So there's two bits. The first bit is the shark has gone into the catacombs of Paris and it's under the city, basically. That's what happens. Yeah. And the students are tracking the shark because they're trying to save it because they're kind of wet liberals.
Yeah.
There's a bit where they're all sort of standing in this kind of subterranean sewer, basically.
Yeah.
The shark appears and then they all just spontaneously fall in.
Everyone falls in.
And there's a right tiz. There's a right old tiz.
And people are getting chopped in half and there's arms and legs flying around and people are climbing out and just falling back in again. And it's just like...
And the same thing happens when the shark... When the shark turns up at the triathlon, everyone just falls in the water again.
Again.
For no reason.
Yeah.
But what I will say about those moments is, those are meant to be the highlights of the film, right? The gory moments where the shark comes and...
That's what you want.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
But they're somehow, and I don't know enough about film to tell you why this is, there's no joy in them whatsoever. And there's no joy in this movie. Like,
it's because there's no tension and you don't care about any of the characters, I think.
The closest to a bit of fun they come to is when Lilith begins attacking the triathletes. And there's a bit where there's a little bit of dramatic irony where the swimmers at the front don't realize that the swimmers at the back are being sort of disappeared and sunk.
Yeah. Kind
of,
yeah.
And a middle-aged man disappears. Another one's gone. That's quite a fun little shot.
Yeah, that's quite a fun shot.
What I mean is, like, in a wider sense, there is a class of movie, and I thought this would be one of these, where they're sort of self-consciously schlocky B-movie, but quite good fun. You know, we, for example, Henry, you and I talked about the film The Beekeeper, which I think is a bit like that. It knows what it is.
Yeah.
It's a big, dumb film that you're going to have a great time watching. And that's how I felt about The Beekeeper. I loved watching it, but I knew it was dumb.
Yeah.
This film is like, sets out to be that, but takes itself quite seriously and there's no fun in it whatsoever.
Well, it's that lack of humour thing, isn't it? It's not having fun with it. Tonally. It's not sort of winking at you, is it?
No. It's one of those things where all of the heroes are all brilliant at what they do. No one's like, I mean, even the main lead, she's down on her luck in that she's just a bit sad.
Yeah.
But she definitely could have carried on her job if she'd wanted to, you know?
Yeah.
She's just in the aquarium because she's sad.
But also there's no Statham. There's no like Statham. Action bastard who's going to turn up with a grenade launcher and...
In terms of acting, I think I've got to give a positive shout out to the lead woman. I actually thought she's a very good actress.
Yeah,
I thought she was good.
She was given shit to eat, though, wasn't she?
No, but I'm just saying. And also, I then Googled her. She's been in some quite good films.
Yeah.
Like, she's been in some very good... I think she's... What films has she been in again? But I also have to do a reverse shout out to the leading man cop, who I thought was pitiful.
Yes, and again, he was given shit to it. He has sort of like a scene where he tried to explain why he was a textured and interesting character. I did a bad experience in the war.
Oh, that's right. Didn't he have like a photo of some war buddies that we saw occasionally?
He pushed to the ground and put flat for a... But the worst performance by a country mile, though, and I feel bad about saying this about anyone, but it is fair... Is the mayor's assistant?
I don't remember that character.
It's worth having a look now and again. He's given nothing to do. Clearly, no one has directed him. He must have been standing there. Look, I've got no lines or almost no lines in this. You're not giving me any action. Like, just do I just sort of gurn and stuff and sort of nod a bit? And he'll try and like sort of
Yes, he had to do a lot of just physical.
He had to
stuff.
Do just something.
He was he the guy in the suit?
Standing still. He was in a suit and a beard.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yes. He had very little to work with.
He panicked, and instead of just staying quiet and still and doing nothing, he thought, well, I've got to fill this space. There's nothing but a couple of shelves here.
Yeah.
He made a pig's ear of it, bless him.
The leading man cop, I thought, played every scene like it was a Paco Rabanne. He was so posy. He was so buff to be a policeman.
Quite pouty. Yeah, yeah.
Policemen are pasty, overweight, pig-like people, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I can say, as I've got a friend who's a policeman, and he ticks all those boxes.
Yeah, I've met him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Pig face.
Yeah, yeah, I liked him.
But yeah, he's a very nice guy.
Pin up, he ain't. With respect.
The other thing I found, which can happen with these films, I think something that's good about Jaws.
Yeah.
And something you need to do is you need to limit the scope of the film to what your budget can kind of encompass.
Yeah.
Because it's the Seine, it's Paris.
Yeah.
It's too big, like, for all these decisions to be being made by, like, three people. Do you know what I mean? Like, so basically all the main decisions are made by, like, this, like, little police squad.
Mayor.
And the hapless mayor. There's no bigger, you know, there's... There'd be the president. There'd be so much more sort of paperwork. Yeah, yeah. So that's why you shouldn't. You know, you should limit it. You should make it in a small town in a small place in America, where like they did in Jaws. You know, you limit it.
Had a similar problem, not just with their CGI cast as well. I think because I think they budget wise they were already struggling with the CGI sharks. So why on earth they decided that they were then going to have scores of them down the line?
Yeah,
because they've done this thing where obviously one of the hedge fund managers has read in a book. Hang on, I think there's got to be sort of rising tension. I think it's escalation
of some sort.
Yeah. It's got to get worse. So how do we
more
do that?
Sharks. It has to be more sharks.
Does she get bigger? Is Lilith armed? Is Lilith privy to some scandalous information? No, just have more of them. Ah, but wasn't the whole thing that she was coming to look for a mate and she's starved of love in the City of Love? Don't worry about that. We'll write one of those scenes where a scientist says a complicated word and says, oh, my God.
It's kybernodulating.
What do you mean? It means that there's loads of other sharks now. Because there is. So don't ask me any questions about it. Just as the kybernobulation zone.
Was the sense of it that it was able to reproduce without a mate now? It was just able to pump out sharks, basically.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, weirdly, the more sharks there were, it completely reversed the successful algorithm of Jaws, which is one shark and hardly ever see it.
Yeah,
it was a massive shark and then millions and millions of them, and you see loads of them. Right. Like, because the shark lost, it was kind of a shark inflation was happening over the film, whereby individual sharks were losing value because the market was flooded with sharks. So,
and all the sharks were pretty big. The little sharks, theoretically, the baby sharks were much the same size as...
Yes.
Really.
Also, basically, if there's sharks in the Seine, this is another problem this film had, a major problem it had, which is if there's sharks in the Seine, then as long as you don't go in the Seine, you're fine.
Yeah.
Which is why they had to have people constantly falling in the Seine. There was no film otherwise.
Not a problem at all.
Just don't go in the Seine. And you wouldn't go in the Seine anyway.
And people would absolutely forgive you if you'd organised a triathlon, even to open the Olympics. And you said, listen, I'm really sorry. We're going to have to move the swimming beat because there's a big shark. Oh, okay.
So you're saying that Sadiq Khan wouldn't be...
there's absolutely no way this that we're delaying this triathlon.
There's absolutely no way we're doing this in Tooting Lido.
Because obviously a triathlon going ahead is more of a positive than loads of people getting eaten by sharks would be a negative on my record. Yeah, that wasn't really explained. So the basic premise, basically what happened was, in developing a project like this, what you do is you go, well, the shark could come to the Seine, but there's no real, people have to falling in the Seine the whole time. Yeah. So we have to have a new idea. Yeah. But that never happened at any point in the process because of the hedge fund, because of the money. And I think the money, and this is the first time I've ever gone against the mainstream media and become one of those people.
Oh my God.
I think that the mainstream media have been got at with their reviews. I mean, the Guardian review.
I don't understand this. I've not seen any reviews. I don't understand how there can be a positive review.
I'm going to tell you what the Guardian review is. By the way, while I find it, the lead actress was in The Artist.
Oh, was she?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So Guardian, under Paris. So the Guardian review is...
But maybe that's partly how it gets made. There's the hedge fund managers, but they still do need to pair with like a commissioner or a broadcaster, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's their special source. They just got to make sure that someone credible is attached.
Yeah.
And that, so they've that got... Was, they've she, got was, she was targeted.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, of course. Attaching someone, yeah.
So the BBC says, under Paris, why a French film about a killer shark in the Seine is the popcorn movie of the summer.
Bollocks.
Bollocks. Under Paris becomes one of Netflix's most watched movies ever.
Like,
I can understand. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
We've all watched it.
And also, if I was 20 years younger and living in a flat share somewhere and skint and having a quiet Saturday, of course we'd go for it. Get some cans and have a brilliant time.
So The Guardian is saying Netflix has delivered one of the best shark movies ever made.
What?
But that might be true because there may only be like one that's actually good. You know what I mean? There's a shark in Paris in a knowingly improbable yet genuinely entertaining summer thriller that deserves its place near the top of a hit and miss subgenre. I don't believe it's genuinely entertaining. And I was asleep for basically the last 25 minutes.
I had to watch it in, I think, four chunks because I've rarely been more bored watching it.
So soporific. Yeah. And the final action sequence, I just kept on falling asleep during it.
Yeah, yeah. The last bit that I watched, I think, was probably the last 5-10 minutes. It was the point when Lilith, like, she bursts out of, they've blown up a underwater bit and she's encased now in the catacombs.
Yeah.
And somehow she bursts out again. I thought, I need a break, actually. It should be the moment of the film where like, oh my God, what? You know, hold the phone, give the dog a juicy bone. It's that moment. But I was just like, ugh. I went off for a nap. It just made me feel tired all over. Couldn't deal with it.
Irritating.
Had to return to it the next day. Begrudgingly.
One thing I'd like to mention is there's a bit where they're tracing the shark.
Yeah.
Through the use of a beep,
yes,
beep,
yeah,
beep device, which is a famous film trope, very used very well in the film Alien, where they trace the alien.
I think they thought when they were making this, I think they thought they would, they were making Alien.
They were remaking Alien.
Yeah. So that bit of it.
One hedgehog man thought they were remaking Alien.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Another one who fancied himself as a bit of more of a sort of liberal arts enthusiast thought they were remaking Victor Hugo.
Yeah.
One thought they were really making Jaws, and away we go.
Yeah, but the decision they made. So you see a map of the river, and they know it's close. You see the decision they made was to make the little beep thing on the screen rather than an alien, where it's a circle. It's just a little dot beep, which means you see the dot, and you imagine it's so much more horrifying.
Yeah,
you see a dot, and you don't know exactly what it looks like. It's terrifying. Here they've made the decision to make the little dot like a little cartoon shark symbol. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And it's just...
It's basically a picture of a sardine.
It's just a picture of a sardine. But it completely deducts the horror that it's creating. Every beat just sort of just destroys its own impact because this tiny little shark logo, this little sardine appears. And it's just a little sardine after them. And also, they're all shark experts. It's a shark crisis. They know it's a shark. They don't have to make it a picture. Unless there's that other one, that there's a prawn. Maybe there's a squid version. There's a mini Jason Statham. Maybe
they're making a rod for their own back if they have to do the whole lot. The animation department at this university is having a nightmare.
So story-wise, we get then to the point, so they try to blow up the shark, I think, is that what they come up to, which again is the Jaws way out, right? That's how they do it in Jaws.
Yeah.
So they decide they're going to try and blow it up. It just goes wrong because they're crap, and the shark bites them. And so I sort of wasn't really paying attention quite how it went wrong, but it just goes wrong.
They had decided that they not only need to blow them up, they wanted to bury all of the sharks in the catacombs, seal them up so they would slowly perish. So that, because there also became a second thing where they thought, well, this is a kind of like a new species now. So if it gets loose in the ocean, they're going to kill everything. Forgetting that at the very, very, very beginning of the film, Lilith already has an entourage of about sort of a dozen acolytes that are the same as her, just a tiny bit smaller. So that ship has sailed. What are you talking about? You know?
Also, I just don't believe that those sharks are going to... Well, I mean, everything in the ocean eats each other. That's nature. And unless
to be fair, though, wasn't it the idea that because it had adapted somehow to living in...
Fresh water.
Within 45 minutes.
They could now all go everywhere. So they they could go up the Thames, they could go into the Grand Union Canal.
Again, not that big a problem as long as you don't fall in.
They can come up your sink.
Come up your toilet.
If they can manage fresh water, it's a small step to a prêt-à-manger, isn't it, basically?
The small ones can swim up a tear and get into your eye socket where they swell and eat their way out of your mouth. It's horrifying to see.
So they've decided they're going to try and encase them all in masonry or whatever. It doesn't happen. So then there's a shark in the Seine, and the triathlon's going ahead.
Yeah.
The shark eats
The triathlon is going ahead. I mean, that is
even with the announcing stage being floated on the river as well. I mean, absolutely. Yeah.
Even the Kwarteng and Truss combo wouldn't have come up with that decision.
And then there's an extraordinary bit where the army who are there just start shooting at the shark with machine guns.
They're sort of showing where they've put their budget there, aren't they? Because we see one boat and one sniper, I think, of the army.
Yeah.
And so they're going, poof, 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 poof. And then the policewoman goes, no, don't do that. The bottom of the Seine is covered in unexploded shells.
Remember, we mentioned that quite early on in the film.
But did they remember? I didn't.
They did, to be fair.
They did
come up very briefly, didn't they?
Because right at the, I think maybe even the very first scene after the initial shark death in the Pacific.
There's an unexploded.
There are people fishing with magnets.
Oh, that's right. They find magnets. Unexploded. Yeah.
There are some other unexploded shells in the Seine here.
And are they from World War II?
I guess so. Although Paris was Paris bombed in the Blitz? It wasn't bombed in the Blitz, was it? Paris?
Well, it was bombed before they invaded it. At the time I thought they're going to Jaws kill it. This is going to get used.
Yes.
Yes, right.
Yes, to be fair, that's exactly, I thought that as well.
I didn't expect them to use the ordnance in the way that they did.
Well, so because you didn't think that a really, really badly pissed donkey would have been introduced to a keyboard and written the final scene.
We've got to talk about the end, because the end is so, so strange. Isn't it strange?
It's hugely strange.
The end is confusing.
So what happens is, the army starts trying to shoot the shark. In doing so, they set off one of the unexploded ordnance at the bottom of the Seine.
Yeah.
That then makes all the other ones go off. And there's
a chain reaction.
And there's a huge explosion.
Yeah.
And then some of the bridges on the Seine are destroyed.
Yeah.
And then for no reason at all, that causes a tsunami.
Appears to come from the other direction from which the chain reaction is.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the tsunami is coming in retaliation.
But basically, because they machine gun a shark, the whole of Paris is flooded.
Yeah.
Not only that, the whole, as far as I could understand, the whole world is flooded.
Yeah.
So all the cities in the world are flooded because someone machine gunned a shark in the Seine.
So I was so confused as to what had happened. Because basically what happens, there's two reasons it's crazy. One is a bomb going off in the Seine wouldn't cause the whole world, the sea, to be overrun by the sea.
It seems unlikely it'd even blow up all those bridges.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wouldn't cause a widespread problem in Paris. Yeah. But secondly, just in terms of story structure, the shark wins.
Yeah, totally.
It's so unsatisfying to watch a group of people try and stop a big shark for 2 hours and then fail.
But does the shark live? I can't remember.
Yeah, they all live. Oh, yeah, and all the babies, they're all swimming around. They're in the, they're on the tube. They're catching the tube.
Yeah.
Sharks on the metro.
Do we see sharks on the metro?
Yeah, there's sharks in the metro. Swimming through the
like that is the level of flooding. Where
imagine you think sharks are scary. Imagine if they could travel by tube. They could get everywhere. They could get, yes, that's right. They could get to Leicester Square. That's right. They get to Covent Garden 20 seconds later. That's right. They get all the way to Watford.
It's easier to walk in many ways, but a lot of tourists.
Hang on.
They'll be
really quick. Or a line bike.
Hang on. If they could get the metro, that means they can get the Eurostar, which means they could get into London, which means they could get onto the underground.
They can get to Heathrow.
It goes as far as Amersham. It's actually above ground around Cockfosters. There'd be sharks above ground in a flooded tube train. Until it gets to a stop and the tube trains would, the doors would open and all the sharks would die. Unless the whole world's been flooded. But for the whole world to flood, that means...
Yeah, where's the water come from?
But even in the Paris thing, they're not really... It's not very clear how there's that much... Because even if there was a massive, like a huge explosion, right? And it did cause a big wave down the Seine and it burst its banks a bit and swept away a few sort of caricaturists and what have you. It's then going to settle down a bit. Right?
Yeah.
As they draw the final caricature of the wave coming towards their face. Yeah. I'm going to give this wave a funny little moustache and big ears. Oh, that's good.
Hang on, this picture looks like every other picture you draw.
You find out my secret, but it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant now because we're all dead.
But yeah. How is the water then settled? Where's this come from? So
exactly.
So that all of just it underwater.
But then I looked, because I was so confused as to what happened. I looked on the Wikipedia page with the plot summary.
Oh, yeah.
And it says... As the end credits suggest, Lilith and her offspring have proliferated in all the major river cities of the world, brackets right. Paris, London, New York, Bangkok, Venice and Tokyo, okay. and seem to have, as Sophia feared, colonised the entire world.
But this whole thing happens in like 3 days of story time, doesn't it?
I assume though, maybe there's no sequel then, because I assume they were very much gearing up for a...
I think they're going to bring
Jean Reno and Statham in and just sort it all out. In the follow-up.
Because they survive. The two main characters survive, don't they?
But is the sequel now therefore going to be set in some sort of dystopian future where...
It's Waterworld 2.
It's Waterworld, isn't it?
It's Waterworld 2. Kevin Costner's been behind the whole thing.
Another favourite of the hedge fund managers.
And do you agree with me that sort of story structure-wise, it feels very unsatisfying at the end when...
Oh, hugely.
Nothing they've done has made a difference and actually... They've just failed.
Yeah, I think it felt like for that kind of schlocky B movie type thing, if they're going to do that, then that needed to happen like in the middle.
Yes, yes.
That needed to be like, here's the problem.
Yes, exactly.
And it wasn't just there's a big shark. It's the world is being taken over by sharks.
Yes.
You know.
And then we meet Statham.
Then in comes Statham.
Yes. Yeah.
Statham, Seagal.
We've genetically engineered a half Statham, half shark mutant.
And even the death of the mayor. So that when you because you're obviously supposed to hate the mayor, right? You're supposed to hate the mayor.
Yeah,
because you need to care about this triathlon not taking place.
Yeah, and this mayor is like really getting in the way of our heroes. And of course, she dies. But she dies. The rule is, and I think the rule should have been followed in this film. If you kill the character you hate, like the mayor in a film like this, you're supposed to absolutely see beyond shadow of a doubt that they're definitely like dead, dead, dead. Not dead in a normal way. Not dead they've tipped over in a tsunami into the Seine. Yeah. Of course, well, that's unsurvivable.
Yeah.
Obviously. No, film dead. Right, that has happened. And then she's been thrown into the air by Lilith and then torn into 1,000 pieces by Lilith's shark children, right? That's
or maybe thrown by Lilith into a helicopter blade,
and the helicopter was being driven by Michael Caine.
She'd blown the budget of Paris to get Michael Caine to fly the helicopter to pick her up. Yeah, and that's how she died. Yeah, that's what you want to see.
And the audience cheers. It's a moment of catharsis, isn't it? Where the big villain gets a horrible comeuppance.
But they don't do it. But she just gets washed over in the.
Yeah, you sort of assume she's probably died, but maybe not.
Yeah, it's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah.
But action movies, disaster movies like that, you can't operate on reasonable assumptions.
No. That's such a good point.
Not when we've seen gore. We've seen gore.
We've seen students getting horrifically mashed up.
Yeah, we can see the students getting... So, yeah, I mean, it's, again, suggesting it's really very much, you know, it's a very anti-green agenda film, largely speaking, isn't it?
But was there a suggestion, though, for ticking the other box that maybe this is a sort of pro-environmental film, was there a sense that the reason that the shark had become sort of mutated into this slightly more bigger, more dangerous shark is because of the amount of plastic in the ocean where it lives?
But I thought that was a point that should have been made, but wasn't. I don't think we ever found out why it got huge, did we?
We never found just out why it got catacombs. Huge. It just was huge.
Yeah, because I thought the film was going to have a message to do with that. And I assumed it was going to be mutated to do with chemicals.
And its hormones were out of whack because of something in the sea or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't bother with any of that. Couldn't be asked.
Yeah, I think there was quite a lot of couldn't be asked going on in it.
Sure, they talked about it.
Yeah, they would have.
Well, probably one of them mentioned it, one of the hedge fund managers, and the other's like, you fucking wet. Who gives a shit? Just sort of a good point. And then they moved on.
So interestingly, I'm looking on Rotten Toms.
Oh, yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes. I've read a news report here which says that it debuted on Rotten Tomatoes at 99%. But that just means there was one review that was good, right?
I see.
Okay. So now,
it's all conspiracy, I think.
So now, the reviews by the professionals are aggregated to 65%.
Which feels generous.
Which is much too high.
Yeah.
But the public vote, audience rating, 32%.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's a huge relief to hear. That's lovely. That's great news.
So why are the reviewers more kind than...
Because of big business, big money, conspiracy. Something's going on.
Palms have been greased.
Yeah, something's going on.
This has got military-industrial complex all over it. Yeah. it reeks of it.
Because you'd expect the critics to normally pan an action film and the public to have a higher rating than the critics, wouldn't you, normally? A good, popular, fun, stupid film, you'd expect the critics to hate and the public to love.
And if the critics had gone, oh, it's a bit of fun, then normally that would be because it is a bit tongue-in-cheek and there's a bit of humour and there's something in the making of the film that suggests, well, you know, this is all very silly, but it's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there's none of that in the film.
No.
Well, there we are.
Well, I hope we haven't come across as, like, real sort of curmudgeons over this one. But I think that 32% rating makes me feel that we're not. I think we're speaking the nation's truth, the world's truth on this.
I mean, do let us know. Leave a comment on Patreon if you've seen it and if you
know. Yeah, maybe we need to get over ourselves. Maybe we're the problem.
The thing is that I would normally be so reticent just to call something total shit.
Same. And equally, I've got very bad taste in movies. I love a bad movie, schlocky movies, action movies, disaster, all that stuff. Great fun. B movies, just pure happiness.
Mm. Yeah.
But this, as I say, I couldn't watch in one go. I found it irritating.
Yeah. It's boring and rubbish.
I should have been an easy audience member for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's getting... zero hot beans.
Well, let's go around. So, Henry, you first. Is this a yay or a nay?
It's a nay.
Mike, is this a yay or a nay?
It's a cold-blooded, deep-water nay.
And from me, it's a nay.
Also, quickly, very quickly, Plemons-Tentral.
Oh, Plemons-Tentral, of course. Has this film got Plemons-Tentral? What character could Plemons play?
I think Plemons would have been really good as the River Cop guy. That Paco Rabanne guy was terrible, I thought.
It needed Plemons something, really didn't much it? Better.
I think he would have been a good recalcitrant mayor.
I also think mayor. Yeah, I think he could have brought that mayor to life. I think he'd have shaken things up and made that mayor real.
Another role that Plemons could have played was Talking Gargoyle, which wasn't actually in the film.
But would have added a real nice touch, a bit of narration.
That could have been the humour.
Narrator, great.
Narrator.
A gargoyle narrator.
Yeah.
Watching from on high.
Or, as we said earlier, maybe a Senside caricaturist.
Yes.
Who's making wry comments about what's going on.
Yeah.
Or just someone who fell into the Sen and drowned 10 years ago. Just sort of Sen corpse that's never been dredged up.
And he wouldn't pull focus because he's a very generous actor. He would just bob around in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a Sen corpse that is literally just a prop or Sen corpse that then comes alive and narrates the film.
He narrates, He's a dead narrator,
A lot of crazy stuff happens in this old river.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. I thought I was going to be bored when I swam on down to this old riverbed, but golly me, things I've seen. It ain't all shopping trolleys and World War II shells, let me tell you. Yeah. Fleming's would do great at that.
You're hearing the story from the point of view of a future dystopia where everything is controlled by sharks. And you're probably, you must be sharks if you're listening to this very tale.
Well, there we go. So that was Under Paris.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening. All right, bye.
Super.
Bye.
Cheerio, thank you.
Bye.